This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so orient, makes you so sick at heart. But you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We have a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. What kind of country is that? Well, it's a country where people help each other, where people cooperate with each other, where people work to make their own lives and the lives of those they know and the lives of all of us, Americans and the rest of the world too, better. That's what we're all about, making life better. All right. Well, I'm going to start things off tonight with an interview I did just a little bit earlier with Frank Cordero. Frank is a regular columnist on our show. He is at the Des Moines Catholic Worker, recently returned from a pretty cool road trip, and he tells us all about it in this interview. I think it's a good one. And here we go. Frank Cordero from the Des Moines Catholic Worker.
Chuck.
Hello, Frank. All right, this thing says it's going to record the call this time, so let's try that again. Man, that was such a great travelogue. I really hate that we lost it, but...
Well, it's not like I'm not used to doing this. Every Sunday, you know?
Yeah.
For many years, I had two gigs. Uh-huh. Same speech.
Okay.
And to really practice, I had a Saturday gig, which is always rough and difficult. So, and this is how outrageous I am. At least 90% of all of these sermons have been recorded by one of those little recording things they used to give you. You know, those tapes and stuff.
A little like a dictaphone. Yeah.
So you're asking me to do a repeat? No problem.
All right. Okay.
As I said to you before, help me write the article I hope to write for the VFP.
Okay.
So here we go. The goal is to get to the National Catholic Worker Gathering in Worcester, Massachusetts. First night out, I spend myself and my brother Joe, who drives me graciously, to my brother Tom. Leaves me there, spends the night, along with friends from the Anathoth Catholic Worker Farm in Wisconsin. More specifically, Mike Miles, Barb Cash, and Al Zip. Great people. And my association with those guys was in the 80s, during when I got to be close to the folks at Jonah House and Phil and Liz. A little pause as I get off the ledge and move on, because this 6th Avenue is rather loud sometimes. So may come over. So this is real time. Later on, they'll blurp it out. Although I will say I'm passing a bush of pastel. Leaves, just a drop. Half of them already dropped down, and the sound of the birds are in my ear. I don't know if it's strong enough. I'm walking down here. Maybe I can get it to you. Here. Well, I don't even know if you heard it.
I did hear it.
Amazing. Okay, yeah. So, as I mosey on down, more speaking about where I've got the folks I was with. The neat thing about Barb and Tommy, my brother, seen each other. They hadn't seen each other since college. They went to Iowa State together. So, and of course, knew of each other's work and met during the 80s during the protest stuff. In fact, in an iconic photo of Bishop Dingman at the line, Barb and Mike are holding one of their children, who was an infant there, in their arms. Really powerful stuff. So all that's part of this gig with Al Zook, who's like the oldest guy in the group. He's like 16 years older than me. I'm 71. You do the math. He's a Plowshares activist. Our trip to, we got up in the morning and we went to, New London, Connecticut. Cause we weren't gonna go directly to the, conference. We went early so we can visit Liz McAllister. Now, Liz McAllister is was the wife of Phil Berrigan, now deceased, and a fellow activist and Plowshares activist. They raised these incredible kids. She's been sort of like the last 20 years the matriarch of the Plowshares Catholic movement in this country. All of us see her as like a mother, if not a grandmother, in so many ways, so many interviews. And she's in a nursing home. She's in one of those mind dementia things, and she needs to be there. She's 90 years old. It was our way to visiting her. But I'm bringing all this up because the best moment of my week didn't happen at the conference, and I'm not taking anything away from the conference. But it happened. Liz, we were visiting in the nursing home, found a place, beautiful place, to pray, which we often do at Jonah House. And that's the... that's the thing about Jonah House. When I went there, I wanted to know what was at the heart of their communal life. And they prayed every day. And they really wanted to live what they prayed.
That's important.
I'm a born-again Catholic. I'm a charismatic. You know, this Jesus, my personal Savior, must follow him. That means have a handle on the Scriptures. That was so, I knew I was in the right place because they were following him, not just mouthing him. I remember this because it's one of the things I told Bishop Dingman about the Jonah House people when he asked about them. I said, the most faithful American Catholics I know. And every day they break open the scripture. You know, I follow them. I follow them because they're my mentors. And that's just a personal testimony about the prayer life for me. So, and when she said this, she started praying. We prayed, and then she started getting into a cadence, and it's like she was not talking to us, but other people, people she's talked to before. And it just kind of went on for a few minutes, just like, wow, man. It's like, it was just holy. It was just holy. So, having said that, then we went to Worcester, and from get-go, I opened up the door in the parking lot of the church. I started meeting people I hadn't met for years. One of the first ones was Phil Runkle. Phil Runkle has been the, until he retired this year, the Catholic Worker Archivist at Marquette University. Most eccentric guy. And I'm so grateful he got there. And at the same time, it's clear that the guy is losing a lot, you know, like you can tell.
All of a sudden, I don't hear you.
Get again, get there together.
Okay, there you are.
Yeah, it's a, and it's, but it was so, you know, I'm all right with that because I'm one of the old folks. And many of the young people are kids of activists and Catholic workers. It was just amazing. That was so delightful. And they had their own young people's round table at supper time. Now, the age was anyone under 40.
That's how
old our crowd was.
Is that like the kids' table at Thanksgiving?
Exactly. So it's like that. One delightful moment, a guy came up to me and said, "Are you Charlie McCarthy, Father McCarthy?" And I'm like, "Oh, that's precious, because all white guys look alike." So I said, "Because I know Father Charlie McCarthy." He was standing at another place in the room, and he's wonderful with the scriptures and nonviolence. And, you know, we've been a good friends. I went to, I said, "Come, this is precious." I brought the guy to Charlie. He was talking to people. I said, "Excuse me, Charlie, I hate to interrupt, but I want you to know, this guy thought I was you." So instead of getting straight, I walked away. And you can do that sort of thing in a crowd of people who you know of or know you. And so I had I just had a great time there. A Charlie moment. I'm sitting at the table. We're at one of the dinners or whatever. And I'm sitting on one side of me is Steve Jacobs, whom I've mentioned before, the guy who started helped start the Columbia, Missouri Catholic Worker. And we got arrested at the Pentagon August 1977, blood spilling. And then I looked to the left of me at John Schuchard, who was then living at Jonah House, was sitting right there, hadn't seen him since the accident. And it's just like that kind of a day. Or 2 days. And I some great workshops. I couldn't go to all of them. I gave a workshop on Jess and Ruby.
Oh, good.
And, I went over the scene, and my basic position was, you know, I'm speaking from a Catholic worker position. Both of these women are the Des Moines Catholic worker, deserve our support. And we need to deal head on with the issue of betrayal and seek any way we can help either one of them come to some kind of reconciliation and blame the federal government for making this draconian system in which put Ruby in such a terrible space mentally to lose her integrity. And say to this is not an exception. This is how they work. This is the operation.
Yeah.
This is how they catch their criminals. They make them squeal on each other.
Yeah.
And please, It's a rotten system. It's still a rotten system.
It is.
And
it is.
And then the other thing is we want them both to be exonerated as domestic terrorists. Neither one of them are domestic terrorists.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, today on Facebook, somebody had posted a picture of a pipeline and said, Biden, you must open this. And so I put a comment on there that said, better tear it down. And then I put a hashtag, free Jessica Resnick.
Cool.
Just that's doing my little thing to throw the name out there.
There might be a track somewhere. Let's keep pounding it. Yes.
Exactly. Yes. You know, when you were talking about Charlie McCarthy, I was tempted to ask you if Edgar Bergen was there.
He's old, but I don't think he's that old. Yeah,
okay.
That's great. Charlie used to teach at University of Notre Dame, and he really was hard on them for their militarization, and eventually just had to leave. I really respect that. I'm hard on Notre Dame. I think they're really the part of the problem. They're too pro-rich, pro-war, pro-U.S. empire.
Right.
So, having said that, I kept espousing that stuff. There's I hadn't told you about Tom Lewis in Norman at the conference. At the conference, I told Michael Boer, who was one of the founders, that Norman Sierra, who had come from the mustard seed, was not well. I mean, he's close to death. God bless him. He's in hospice at a nursing home right now. So he posted on that. And he's having a tough time. So I told Michael that. So during the first night's opening session, Michael welcoming people, told people to hold Norman in prayer. Because Norman was one of mustard seed's first dishwashers.
Wow.
And it was their 50th anniversary that they celebrated. And then another connection with me and the folks in Mustard Seed and the Des Moines House is with a guy named Tom Lewis. Now, most folks don't know Tom Lewis. Most folks in our movement don't know about Tom Lewis. Tom Lewis was a participant in the first two actions. The first one is in Baltimore. The Baltimore Four.
Okay.
And Bill Berrigan and David Engelhart, another guy from Minnesota, went into the Baltimore bat draft board, grabbed files, and threw blood on them. Right as they opened them up, threw blood on them, and they were arrested, they were let out. And then within a month or two, or a few months, they did the Catonsville Nine.
Okay.
Doing blood.
And that was famous.
Fire, the napalm. Napalm thing. He was part of that. Then the movement itself took off. And so it became effective in disrupting the whole draft team. So that the government figured out how to do it a different way, which they did. There's no way to bring it down in such ways. But back in the day, when the empire was a little more vulnerable, you were able to do something like that. And he was part of the first two of these things. And he's an artist, a painter. He continued to paint movement stuff. I visited him sometime in the 80s at his house, which is just across the street from Mustard Seed. That's where he was from. And he it was amazing. He did this art stuff about the ink. Let me give a sneeze. A one? The second perfunctory one. All right. He does a painting with natural stuff. He creates his own paint canvas, really? All that.
No, stuff. Wow, wow.
The third one, backing it up. All right. So he's explaining this all to me, and he's got some beautiful etchings, really powerful stuff. And he did the etchings for a book that Dan Berger wrote on the prophet Ezekiel. Now, knowing he got a lot of Ezekiel, the etches have to be doing with otherworldly things and the powers of principalities, as they would say. Wonderful, really great stuff. And I'm telling you this because he gave me one of those etches. And I put it on the Catholic Worker wall. And these people who are doing a video, I told them that. And I'm sending a picture so that they know. And I told them how Tom Lewis gave us this this etching for our house. And that, so it was the whole thing was a, just a great opportunity to touch, get in touch with my Catholic radical roots. And with a vibrant, in my world, the East Coast Catholic left is vibrant, intergenerational, and people who care for each other in so many ways. It was very edifying.
I just wish there were some Catholic Worker presence in the Southeast instead of all. It seems like it's all up in the northern areas. There's no not too many warm weather Catholic Worker outposts. But
well, the warm weather one is in L.A. Yeah, and they dominate. They're amazing. They are amazing. Yeah. And they have a, like, they call them sister communities, and I think they started about 18 of them.
Up and down the coast. Really?
And in Nevada. Oh, yeah. 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 It's
but
one
there's
of
nothing in Florida. Oh, well.
I don't know what to tell you. You know, if I had another life, I'd go down there and start one.
That'd be great.
Yeah. That'd be a no-brainer. Like that or winners. Get away from the winners. Yes, of course.
Yeah, right? Well, Frank, thank you so much. This was really good, and it sounds like it's just a wonderful trip. I'm so glad that you got to do that.
Thank you. So, yeah, had a great time. All right.
Okay.
More later. I hope this
okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Thanks to Frank Cordera. Can always count on him for an interesting story, and tonight was no exception. In fact, it was one of the best ones. What a great trip that was. So originally, I had scheduled Abba Bird as the first guest tonight, but I had a late cancellation from Karen Katowski, who is scheduled to be on last. So I've asked Abba to join us for the final half hour at 9:30 Eastern Time. So I'm going to share a little something that I learned earlier. All right, hang on. All righty then. So, have you ever heard of the common meter? Well, it's a poetic construct. And the interesting thing is that a lot of music is based on the common meter. So here's something peculiar, all right? This is a poem, or part of a poem, from Emily Dickinson. And I think you may recognize the tune that I sing it to. Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality. How about that? Who knew that you could sing an Emily Dickinson poem to the theme from Gilligan's Island? Right? But, you know, there's something else that was pointed out to me. There's another song that that can also be used, another tune. So let's try one more here. There are actually a lot of them, but I'm only going to inflict one more on you. Okay, here we go. Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality. How about that? We're getting religious here, singing to Amazing Grace, but not exactly the usual words. All right. Well, I thought that was fun, and so that was a nice interlude for us. All right. I am now going to bring you a little bit of a blast from the past. Here is one of our unusual advertisements that we used to feature back when Mike Palachek was with me on the New American Dream radio show. Okay, here we go.
Tonight's show is sponsored in part by the good folks at Shop and Flop, indoor porta potties for the busy Christmas shopper. We know soon you'll be on the run all day long. Round and round in circles, buying stuff to keep your favorite Americans happy, but sooner or later you're going to need a pit stop. Why not? Shop and Plop. Shop and Plop. Take some time out to sit in your own little world, inches from the hurried masses around you, brushing against the wall while you hold on tight. You hear their conversations. Who's a bitch? Who shot what? Are you searching the dark for the paper roll? Hold on to both walls, wondering if some teenage swarm might decide to tip you over? Reach out your foot to touch all your expensive hard-won packages to make sure your whole day, your whole life wasn't wasted. You smile. It's all good. Then you hear a satisfying plop in the communal goo, and you're ready to continue, to push on, persevere in your pursuit of the American dream. You emerge refreshed, victorious. Join your fellow Americans, some standing in line glaring at you, some rushing past brandishing razor-sharp elbows. You smile. For a moment, you pause to adjust those heavy bags cutting into your arms, and you nod knowingly. Now realizing, for perhaps the first time with such clarity, why we killed all those millions of Indians and those millions of Iraqi children and all those poor people in Afghanistan. You step down as a lady from your throne, as the next person takes your hand to allow you to set your blistered foot once again on the top of the mall tile floor. You gracefully bend your leg to pull the paper from your shoe. You smile at the waiting line as a movie star to her adoring fans. Shop and Flop, the American way to go. Look for the handy blue and yellow plastic huts in the middle of the mall.
Ha ha! Well, Mike Palaszczuk certainly has an intriguing sense of humor. He started this show with me back on February 3, 2011. And, we've been going ever since. He left a few years back, but thank you for being here with me. And thanks to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm very lucky to be on this network. And let me remind you, it is a listener-supported station. They do deserve your support. So be sure to head on over to freedomslips.com and find one of the many ways that you can help support Revolution Radio, the bastion of free speech in America. Our next guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugia. Philip joins me each week from Port Orange, Florida. And I'm going to add him in right now. Philip is an extremely prolific columnist, and I'm very fortunate to have him as part of this show.
Good evening.
Good evening. I was just telling people how great you are, and Philip's columns are, most of them are available on itsTheEmpireStupid.com, a website that I maintain for him, and soon there will be a book.
Well, that's what I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask all your listeners out there, Chuck, to contact Chuck Gregory and tell him get the book.
Tell him to hurry up and do the book, right? All right, I hear you. I hear you. All right.
Good man. Because if you don't, then you're going to wind up taking an elevator to hell.
Oh, no.
Now, let's get to it. There has to be a heaven, if only by process of elimination. You see, if there is a hell, then there has to be the antidote, heaven. To this writer, who has spent his adult life studying many facets of what many call metaphysics, this trip we are all on is nothing more than a dream. Perhaps we can substitute the term purgatory for this third-dimensional so-called life. It is nothing more than a universal test, this mortality we reside in. Choices are constantly thrown at us, and we have the free will to decide what to do on each occasion. Food for thought, indeed. So, for those who study history, especially world history, just about every century has had instances of death and destruction. Again, it was just free will in most cases. Before I was born, we had the single worst period of the 20th century, World War II, and the Third Reich, which its bastard child, the Holocaust. When all the smoke cleared, what did we as humanity, or should I say the leaders of powerful nations, learn from this tragedy? Well, greed and power fed the narrative for selfishness and outright, dare I say it, evil. Ego replaced empathy as a select few controlled and dominated the rest of us. The love of money stood front and center. Now look around you. How many of you out there have to juggle finances to stay above water while the super rich laugh inside of their gated communities? Look at the politicians who are supposed to lead us. They are either mega millionaires, wannabe millionaires, or proponents of a free market for the wealthy. And who do you think creates wars? Is it the 9-to-5 working stiff or unemployed working stiff? Who do you think creates economic depressions? Who benefits from both of the aforementioned? Just go back to the 2003 illegal and immoral attack, invasion, and occupation of Iraq. And then 5 years later, the subprime housing bubble burst. crisis. Was it low and middle income Americans who started the shitstorm? No. It was what I mentioned earlier. Greedy and powerful, super rich people who had their fingers wrapped around our government, media, and business. They owned enough of the politicians to start their wars, ones in which they or their relatives never had to participate in. Fortunes were and are made. Simple reality. You bomb the hell out of a country, destroying its infrastructure, and then you go in with contracts to rebuild. You screw up an economy during a financial crisis and then get the working stiff taxpayers to bail you out. Do you remember the then Secretary of Treasury, Henry Paulson, standing before the cameras in 2008, almost tearing up? He was so sad that America was ready for default. Poor Henry, who a year or two earlier retired as CEO of the bandit Wall Street firm Goldman Sachs with a compensation package worth $500 million. So Donald Trump belongs behind bars for most likely many crimes. To me, his biggest one was inciting an insurrection on January 6, 2021. They got him on saying as much. Imagine if the mob that stormed the Capitol building was made up of protesters against police murder of unarmed black people. They would not have even gotten to the front entrance before being either tear gassed or shot dead. Yes, Trump and his cabal should have all been indicted by now. And let's retrace back to the phony war on Iraq, orchestrated by the Bush cabal. Junior Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rice, Powell, and many other generals and officials should have been indicted for war crimes. Ditto for Obama for what was done under his watch. Mr. Hope and Change had 10 times more drone missile attacks than the criminal Bush gang. Methinks that there is what I call universal justice, also known as karma. To all the greedy and powerful who do such evil deeds, your elevator will be ready someday. No need to pack.
Yeah. All right, then. All right, Philip. The first thing I've got to react to is your very first paragraph today about this trip we're all on being nothing more than a dream. And this is a theme you've used before. And I've mentioned a song before, but tonight I'm going to share a verse and a chorus with you. So here we go.
Okay.
Look out of any window, any morning, any evening, any day. Maybe the sun is shining, birds are winging, or when rain is falling from a heavy sky. What do you want me to do? To do for you, to see you through, for this is all a dream we dreamed one afternoon long ago. The song is called Box of Rains by the Grateful Dead, and
okay.
You should check out.
That was a good lyric. That was a good lyric.
Isn't that cool? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a dream. But let me ask you, how do you feel? How do you feel about the premise that this is a dream?
Well, it's I don't know. I mean,
let me elaborate a little bit. Because a lot of people don't understand when you say it's a dream. What I mean by the dream is what the Hindus and other Eastern religions teach, but the Hindus definitely, that there is a part of Chuck, a part of Philip, a part of Lorraine. They call it the higher self. It's a part of our energy that is already on the other side of this veil of life or dreams or death, whatever. And that is the real powerful, super intelligent part of us, facet of us. And then Phil and Chuck and Lorraine and everybody else, we're in human form, you know, and we have souls, and we're connected, but we don't really hear it, to our higher selves. And they have set up the dream, and then we have the free will. You know, once the dream gets going, we have the free will to do whatever we decide to do. And that's to me, it's a...
Uh-oh. Well, we have just had a little glitch, and we're going to have to get Phil back on this call. So I don't know quite what happened, but we're having
what
some
happened?
Interest. Well, I don't know. It just all of a sudden you went away, but
yeah, I went away and I came
back.
All right.
Okay, you're anyway, back.
So anyway. So that's what I would suggest, that this is a dream, and we have free will. That's it. That's the important thing, you know. So when I say that this is a dream, that's what I mean. I mean that it feels real to us, because to us in the third dimension, it is real. It's happening now. I'm sitting here talking to you. But on a higher level, it's like, it's almost as like the other part of us, the higher part of us, is looking down at us. Like, almost like a, I don't want to say a marionette, because the marionette would be that the puppeteer has the power. That's not true.
Uh-huh.
We have the power. We have the we have free will. But they're like watching us. We're like going through a movie.
Yeah.
That we create. We create our own movie. We're the writers, the actors, the directors, and our own movie. So that's what I mean by
okay. Very good.
Physics. Yeah, yeah. And you know, I wrote my sons a letter, because I have two sons who in addition to having trouble with me, I don't know, I haven't heard from them in a long time, but they're two brothers and they don't talk. They hate each other.
Oh, okay? No.
Yeah, they hate each other. Yeah, it's been going on for years now. And it's sad, because I remember them when I was divorced, you know, and I used to pick them up twice a week, and we all had a great time, the three of us, you know.
Yeah,
Anyway, so I wrote them a quick letter. I mailed it out. I said, it's Halloween. Would you do a treat for me, for your father? And I said, I need you to forgive each other. I need you to totally reach out and forgive each other. But I said, this has to be a dream. And I've always told you two about that, how I felt about what I just explained to you, Chuck, you know, about that this is a dream. And I says, how could it not be a dream is if Donald Trump became president of the United States? It has to be a dream. It can't be real. Chuck, it can't be real. Please, you can forget about World War II. You can forget about anything else you want to talk about. How could all you need to prove that this is a dream, that this cannot be totally real, is that Donald Trump became president of the United States? Think about what I'm saying.
Well, I hear you. You know,
Woody Allen could not have written a better script.
Well, I seem to be in a mood to either sing or do quotes or whatever tonight. So I have something else here, and this is another possibility. Okay, or maybe another aspect of the same. Whatever. Here we go. The world is like a ride in an amusement park. When you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. The ride goes up and down and round. It has thrills and chills. It's very brightly colored. It's very loud, and it's fun for a while. some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us. They say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid ever, because this is just a ride. And we kill those people. Shut them up. We have a lot invested in this ride. Shut them up. Look into my furrows of worry. Look at my big bank account, my family. This just has to be real, but it's just a ride. We always kill those good guys who try and tell us that. That's the beginning of a bit by Bill Hicks, who was really a fascinating guy, stand-up comedian.
Bill Hicks, your name is Bill Hicks? What was he, a writer or a singer?
His name was Bill Hicks. He was a stand-up comedian, died, you know, probably 20 years ago. But did he I mean, wasn't that good? I mean,
no, it kind of fits in with when I was alluding to.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, I know.
The ride, yeah. No, I think that's true though. I believe mm-hmm. that this is a dream, and you know, but it's real. It's not that, you know, when you say a dream, you think that everyone's sleeping. No, the opposite. Yeah. Everyone's awake because it's a dream, but it's like a dream. Yeah, you know, you've had mm-hmm. dreams. I've had dreams, right? That look so. Then you have a dream that felt so real. I mean, you woke up.
I think so, but I don't really remember my dreams usually, but yeah, I there's definitely been some times I woke up and, you know, wasn't sure if I was really back to reality or not.
Well, yeah, I remember a dream that was so good. It was such a great dream that, you know, I have to get up every two hours to take a, you know, to urinate, you know,
tonight
I have a prostate problem. So one of my 2 hours that I woke up, I had this great dream going on. And I remember going in the bathroom and say, I want to go back to that dream. I got to hurry up. Come on, I want to get the piss out of me. I want to go back to that dream.
Right?
I don't want to, come on. And then I get back to bed and I'm trying to, you know, and it usually doesn't work.
You can't find it again. Yeah. But of course, one thing you always have to remember is you don't ever go to the bathroom when you're in the dream. You can make sure you wake up.
Yeah, <it's true. laughs> you know what? Oh, forget it. I don't want to say that.
Yeah, yeah,
Frank, I once did
that
a terrible
bad.
Prank. But you know, I guess when we're younger, we do stupid things, right?
Mm.
But I told you about that movie, Astral City. Astral City. It was a Portuguese movie.
Uh-huh.
Everybody
uh-huh.
listening should get that movie. It's a Portuguese film. Came out about 9-10 years ago, and it's based on the automatic writing of this person or this entity from the other side. Well, I mean, the guy was there's a man who lived now then, and he was doing the mm-hmm. automatic writing as a technique, and he was communicating mm-hmm. with a spirit, a soul that already passed and was on the other side, you know. And he told him all kinds of stories about his own life, you know, before he died. Anyway, and they made a movie out of it,
huh.
Or a book. It was a book first, but the movie is really great. It's a doctor. Mm-hmm. I think the entity was a doctor, and it's a doctor, mm-hmm. and he was very cold in his life. You know, he wasn't not that he was evil, but just very cold mm-hmm. and anyway, and he gets very sick and he dies. Mm-hmm. And he winds up in purgatory, and you see mm-hmm. the purgatory. It's like the purgatory is like a graveyard, you know, an ominous uh-huh. looking graveyard, dark, you know, and there's souls laying like right next to each other, you know,
mm-hmm.
in this big graveyard. And it's, you know, it's not, you know, it doesn't look very pleasant. There's no grass. It's like mud, you know, they're laying in mud.
Uh-huh.
And then after they don't tell you how long, but a group of illuminated, enlightened souls that passed over, they come for him. They come for his soul. And come with us, come with us. You've been here long enough. Now, they don't tell you how long he was there. You know, it's all, you know, not really important. But they take him, and they take him to what is heaven. In other words, that's purgatory, where he was. And it was like he was just laying there, you know. He only had no action, no movement, just... So they take him to what is heaven, and I think the soul that was his mother greets him, you know, and she's there, and... And anyway, it just shows you, and then he does some work to help other souls that came through and had trouble, because he was a doctor, so he's helping, and that's what the movie's about, you know, I mean...
Interesting.
How wonderful it looks there compared to Purgatory, which was, you know, I'm going to give you a quick joke. Can I give you a quick joke?
Okay, go for it.
Okay.
All right,
this bad guy, very evil man, he dies, and he winds up in hell. So the devil greets him personally and says, I'm going to greet you personally because you are so bad. I'm so happy to have you here. You know, and I'm going to give you a choice of any three rooms you want to stay in for all eternity. So, all right. So he takes us to the first room, and it's all these souls. They're on their heads. They're standing on their heads on a stone floor.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, ooh, the floor's kind of cold, you know, and all eternity? I don't know. Let me see the next room. Goes into the next room. Everybody's on their heads on this wooden floors, you know, and he goes, oh, it might be splinters. I don't know. That doesn't look too appealing. What's the next room? Yeah. He goes to the next room. Everybody's walking around with coffee cups, drinking coffee up to their knees and shit. they're slogging through up to their knees in the manure, drinking coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, wow, what a smell, he goes, but you know, I do like coffee, and you're always on the move, you know, you're not, like, stuck. He says, all right, I'll take this one. And as he signs the contract, there's a guy walking around grabbing the coffee cups and goes, okay, coffee break's over, everybody back on your heads.
Well, amazingly enough, I was going to tell you that joke. So that's pretty good. Obviously, I have heard it, but it's a really good one.
That's a funny joke.
All right.
We have an election coming up.
We do indeed. And I vote on election day. I like to actually go to the place and do the thing. Do it right there.
You want to get beat up? That's good. Okay.
Well,
they have people. Yeah. They have people hanging out at some places in the South too, where guys in camouflage hanging around, you know, looking like real scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I'm serious. I'm not making this up. I know.
And that's pretty scary. And of course, if they try to pull that on me, I'm probably going to get it in their face. But
there was a guy. I don't know how much time. How much time we got? Here we go. 2 minutes.
4 minutes.
Okay. I was talking to a customer from Ohio. I haven't spoken to him a couple of years. Anyway, he's a blue collar. He's a small businessman. He has a blue collar business.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the brightest candle. He's not. Anyway, we're talking, and he starts bringing up politics, which I don't like talking about to customers. And he starts telling me stuff about the government, you know, all this right-wing stuff about the government, and they're doing what they're getting away with, and taking little boys into girls, and you know, and the taxes, and the inflation is high, and there's all this crime, and there's the worst thing, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, you know what they did? You know what happened in Akron, Ohio? And I said, I'm not making this up. He goes, this is true. You can check it out. A kid goes to school and he says he's a cat. And they even put kitty litter in the bathroom for him. And I'm not making this up, he says. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? That's what's going on in this country? Now, Chuck, I don't know what probably happened. There's a lot of young people doing that. I think it's called furries or something. Where they have parties and they dress up as an animal. I never heard of it until recently.
I don't know. I haven't heard of that one. But
yeah, it's a popular thing. It's a popular thing around young people. So what probably happened in that school, they were probably playing, doing a thing with the furries or something.
Yeah,
the
right.
Teacher said, I'm a cat. He comes in as a cat. So maybe somebody, the teachers put kitty litter, like as a part of the game, you know, as a joke. And this guy thought it was serious. I said, "What is the kid? Is he mentally ill?" I said, "He must be mentally." I didn't know. He's telling me the story. I said, "Gee, he must be mentally ill if he thinks he's a cat." I mean, the kid needs psychiatric help. He goes, "I'm telling you. You understand? They put kitty litter in the school bathroom." He believed that the kid thought he was a real cat, and they did that to help the kid. I mean, this is what is going on. This is what's going on through the media. It's crazy, Chuck.
It is.
And for all the people listening, the next time you look at a Trump rally, go get a copy of the documentary World at War, about World War II, and look at all the rallies that the Nazis would hold, the giant rallies with all the pomp and circumstance and then look at a Trump rally and the people yelling and, you know, going frenzy, the crowds of people yelling, hysterically yelling for him like they did for Hitler. This is what I think that the Trump people or Trump, they did this on purpose when they started doing this back in 2015. They copied from the Nazis.
Yeah.
They copied from,
you know,
I'm telling you.
The Nazi movement was spectacularly successful.
That's what I'm saying.
So naturally, people want to do it.
And the stormtroopers wore brown uniforms. Yeah. The stormtroopers wore brown uniforms. Some people wear the red MAGA hats.
Yeah.
That's the uniform. You wear the red MAGA or you wear the T-shirt, whatever crazy T-shirt.
Yeah.
This is a sick country, my friend. And we'll leave it at that.
We will leave it at that. That seemed like a good place. And thank you so much.
Finish that book.
I'm working on it. All right. Thank you, Philip. All right. And thank you, listeners, for being here on the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio, and it's time for the station break. See you on the other side.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
In the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick, I think. Welcome to the crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for free association. when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the new American Dream Radio Show. And for our next guest, we have Michael Annis. Michael joins me every month in this week. And he always has very interesting things to bring us. He's a poet, a publisher, a musician, just a very talented guy. Michael Annis, joining us from Denver. Going to bring him onto the show right now. Calling him up in Denver. Well, something didn't work there, so let's try this again.
Hello.
Well, hello, Michael. Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Well, hi, Chuck. Good to be back on the New American Dream. Question, are we ready for the upcoming election?
Ha! I don't know.
I'm generous.
I'm concerned about what's likely to happen in Florida. It appears that our crazy governor DeSantis is pretty far ahead of the Democratic challenger, Charlie Crist. Crist really is not my favorite, but DeSantis is awful. So yeah. I don't know.
I guess if he's far ahead, you're in the minority opinion on DeSantis. Anyway, you know, well, I'm generously terming this whole thing as the countdown to collapse, which will usher in global cataclysm. And you can quote me tonight. New American Dream, Michael Annis said this. So for now, I'm biding my time with a new project and perhaps my most complex one to date. And I'm excited.
Oh. All right.
Excited about premiering it on your program tonight.
All right.
And if I may, at first, a little history about my past work that's led me here, including years as a monthly guest on your show. And I don't know how many years. It's been quite a few now. And it should be valuable in introducing my new work that I intend to get me through the next 25 New American Dream programs.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So are you ready?
Okay, then.
Are you ready for 25 more New American Dream programs?
I might have to have you on more often.
I guess. Okay, so I've prepared a written synopsis here to avoid leaving anything out. So from this point on, I'm reading, okay? I began my quest into literature when I was 18 years old, and I'm quite a bit older than that now, and through the years, I have not forsaken my vision. At the beginning, I was very romantic about the world of poetry, not romance per se, though poetry was a vehicle for that also, but a romance with language, realizing it to be the primary vehicle upon which I would ride through my life. I desired to bring forth my inner vision to the world. First, I had to find it. But after finding it, that's what I wanted to do in all its naivete and hopefulness that somehow I would be able to transcend a mediocre existence. And somehow I would be capable of bringing about positive, if not profound, change to the world. And that is more or less in the trash bin now as I am older and realize that not much changes the world, no matter how significant it might be. Things rise and fall and get lost, and that can be disappointing. So what has kept me going instead of giving up is an undying love for people who cannot speak for themselves, or who the world has not been attuned to or ready to hear and understand. Unfortunately, for a while, I also had a serious drinking problem, which I cultivated, convinced all writers of any substance were addicts of some stripe. My 20s and half of my 30s were a blur. After it became apparent that I could neither be responsible toward anyone I loved nor my work, I quit, which was the best decision I had ever made. So I don't know if you remember or not, but a month or so ago, when on your program, when I was on the New American Dream, I said to you that I was trying to understand my thinking process, why and how I think, and what ignites poetic and metaphorical thinking in my often very analytical, critical mind. And I struggle with it constantly. It's a battle. To quote from one of my own poems, which I did read prior to this program, there was 9 cantos. In the very opening of that long poem, the lines are, brain halves at war for control, fight for possession of psyche. I've taken psyche valuation tests and have found that I seem to be in the rarest of rare categories. Plus, being a left-hander, physiologically, my right and left brain hemispheres are connected by a larger corpus callosum conducive to increased information transference hemisphere to hemisphere. I've studied that. I even have written about that. I wrote about that in Ab Initio. My oddness is not a figment of my imagination either. My daughter, for example, at her wedding, would introduce me to her friends – by saying, his brain doesn't work like ours, but he's still smart. Okay. And that left me wondering about my apparent mental oddness, whether it was a disease, you know, insanity, or whether I was actually smart or whether just some psychic stranger filled with strange ideas and strange manners of expressing them. And I've been told by musicians, you think like a musician and you see like an artist, but you talk funny. And once a friend said to me, Michael, not everything is art. But I countered, well, what isn't? I'm serious. What? Because all of my perception is that it is all art, every moment. So to this day, my primary vehicle of understanding the world and possibly understanding myself remains language, and my writing, I've been told, is highly visual compared to that of most poets. I have often collaborated with visual artists, and some have been my best friends and a few my mentors. When I construct a piece of literature, poetry, or prose, I see it visually. I think it through visually. I structure it visually. I speak in metaphors constantly, just like I'm doing now, an elongated metaphor on the human condition. And it feels out of sync. Strange. Fortunately, once again, I'm in a collaboration with an artist, Henry Avenon of New York, an artistic visionary, a genius so far ahead of his time and so prolific it makes your head spin. He's produced thousands of visual artworks, and I have often collaborated with him in the past, to name a few as follows. Omega 7 from Hive This Mind, a 240-page anthology online of his artwork and dozens of writers, poets, a filmmaker, and myself as editor, writer, and designer. Another collection featuring his artwork and poems and my literature is Select Abstractions, published in a book, which received standing ovations at presentations in Paris at his shows. Henry also created the art that I selected for the cover of my recent personal retrospective, which you have a copy of, Chuck, Howling at the End of the World's Volume 1, and his work will be prominent in Volume 2 when that's published. So last summer, he invited me to collaborate one-for-one, artist and poet, a piece of art with a corresponding poem of the same title in a cycle of 100 pieces that is titled Miserere. I thought about it for a while, committed to it, decided it could easily be my swan song, and spent 3 weeks developing an unfolding structure for the literature. I'll go into that in detail in a forthcoming program. So 100 poems equaled one per week for 2 years. It seemed doable, and I'm currently writing number 11. Invariably, when I mention to someone that I have a new book, or now when I say, I'm writing 100 new poems, they politely ask me, 100 poems? Geez, what about? In the past, I usually responded about a lot of things, which seemed terse and intolerant. So now when they ask, what about? To avoid any affront, I say, dogs. And they say, dogs? Yeah, you know, collies, dachshunds, pit bulls, beagles, Grand Pyrenees, Chihuahuas, the works, dogs. And then they say, you're writing 100 poems about dogs? And I say, well, that's not all exactly. And they say, well, what else? And I say, well, how much time do you have? And they say, I'm good, shoot. And I say, have you ever heard of the Deus Decide? And they say, huh? Never heard of that breed. And I say, it's a breed of human being, a breed I discovered. It means God-fallen. And then they get a little glassy-eyed like dead fish. So I thought it might behoove the entire situation to write something up, an overview that tells what the poems are about beyond dogs. And if I may, Chuck, I'll read the overview to the Miserere series that I include in submission letters when I submit the work to publishers. Right, this will do a lot of explaining. The collaborative collection titled Miserere by artist Henry Avenon and poet-writer Michael Annis is a dialogical revisioning of Georges Brault's collection by the same title, Miserere, which he created between 1922 to 1927. Yet our Miserere has a life and a death of its own realization and is intended neither to imitate nor supplant the original. It is a modern, complete, collaborative work of both the visual and the lingual, whereas its predecessors was limited to the visual. The thematic span of collaboration in the entire cycle covers every existential and philosophical meditation extant, including climate cataclysm, suicide, revolution, evolution, primordial foundations, mind science, decaying political and religious organizations, the many various human species, living and dead, prehistoric, historic, and so on, in the abstracted continuum of imprisonment and liberation. Death is an overlording character, as is that of the Deus Decide, the God-fallen, represented by John Milton's primary character in Paradise Lost, from which individual excerpts are chosen as the opening quote out to begin each piece. Death is itself a power apparatus, a machine with infinitely destructive potential if ignored. Therefore, death force becomes the subject of meditation through acts of mental and physical attention, engagement, interaction, and interpretation, enabling the collaborators to explore and better understand the complex network of effects that control and manipulate the powerful degenerative forces and repercussions negative systems exert on personhood. Miserere operates on multiple levels, including structural abstraction, narrative, theatrical artifices, entanglements, disentanglements, and so forth, through an interlocking cycle of 100 poems produced in conjunction with 100 visual art masterpieces. New descriptive territories in this bicameral multiverse of artistic creation are introduced, such as the human hive mind, the ulterior universe, and Homo Christos, to name a few, reimagined, broadened, and enfleshed. In fact, each subtitle in the cycle introduces conceptual neo-realities explored not only through the visual art, but likewise in the collaborative literature written specifically for each piece. The opening group of 10 works of this collection, of which I am performing the first one tonight, are designated the Suicide Suite, in memoriam of the tragic suicide of the artist's brother, and by extension, the several suicides the writer has experienced of friends and family. It is metaphorical and allegorical, speaking of suicide on a personal, concrete level, while prescient of suicide of the entire human species, reflective of the political direction toward which we are being coerced, perhaps engineered. As a continuous network of expression, it congeals as an entanglement within a matrix of psychic vulnerabilities, revealing a splayed synaptic tangle of exposed nerve endings, a non-healable wound festering in the world, a deeply spiritualized gaze into the abyss of human peril. Miserere is a Latin word that means have mercy. Mercy from tragedy, misery, suffering, injustice, pain, loss, grief, hopeless destiny. Our Miserere is an ever-expanding bridge between suffering in the past, suffering in the present, and suffering in the future, as the meltdown of the human race and its planet streams onward, recognizing the power of the life force itself being risked as the ultimate gamble and the ultimate victim for destructive human behaviors. So that's the overview. And I think I have time for one poem. It's important that I, okay, so one of the people that in each of the poems I quote another poet. And in this first one, I quoted Charles Baudelaire. And when I get to that line, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ring the bell so that you know that this is Charles Baudelaire speaking and not Michael speaking, because I detest stealing from other writers and artists. I don't tolerate it in others, and I don't tolerate it in myself. So, you know, credit where credit's due. And then there's also a word that's a made-up word. It's called, the word is ochialism, which is a noun meaning the awareness of how fundamentally limited your senses are, how intrusively your brain fills in the blanks with its own cartoonish extrapolations. Ochialism is taken from a book titled The Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows by John Koenig. So credit where credit's due. The first poem in the Miserere series, the opening poem, begins with a quote from John Milton, Paradise Lost. Of man's first disobedience and the fruit of that forbidden tree whose mortal taste brought death into the world and all our woe. The Last Supper, Christ's point of view. Heavenly wasteland, born of drugs and alcohol, spews eternal resurrection. Mythic superstition, bloodletting veins. Lucifer of light, conqueror worm of disentanglement. Legions of believers ignorant of belief. Angelic malfeasance, eyes the bore of gun and sword. Slaughter of innocents, firstborn nailed to their cross. Triumvirate treacherous, man worships God, Satan, and Christ. Screaming for lost children alone in the universe. Screaming alone in the universe. Under bondage like absinthe, the chaliced sedition. Paradise bleeds out over flat earth's dead core. Poets, our blood discharges through every pore. Exacting a bounty, though art defies death, perdition releasing the fury inside the heart's tempest, where minds commune as shades in their shadows, clash through their hearts. Homo Christos, imprisoned liberator, deep inside the cell of man. Revolution incarnate, every mind a holy time machine. Internal wars of absolution, dead and dying fallen angels. Son and brother, whose dejection derailed into despair. Torn asunder, plundered, falling into discharged nightmare. Sangre de chagrin, drunken with tragedy, omniscient as air. Prick of the needle in vain, bleeds out relief, swims inward, escapes. Ochialism throngs the masses. Human agony conceives murder, vexation unto madness. Old world disorder, recoiled wasteland, aborts thee. That's poem number one in this series of 10.
Okay.
Do I have more time or what?
You have another 5 or 6 minutes.
Oh, okay. If I have 6 minutes, I'll do number two.
Okay, go for it.
All right. This one is titled, first of all, Devu, the awareness that this moment will become a memory. And the quoted poet is Cesar Vallejo, a Spanish surrealist, Spanish-speaking surrealist. Miserere 2. Hurled headlong, flaming from the ethereal sky, with hideous ruin and combustion down to the bottomless perdition, there to dwell. In adamantine chains and penal fire, who durst defy the omnipotent to arms? John Milton, Paradise Lost, Miserere 2. Suicide detonates the nuclear family. Each and all, under the watchful gaze of paradise, this black hole is eternity. Insurrection ignites the flaming fall. Pride carves a trail like cancer. Causality sides with despair, infecting sua fratra infanta hom iside, beside plains of wither. While hot mind burning penal fire, devastation of each child spills out devastating waves of insanity. Eradicates human Christos from gallows, corpses hurled to burial pyre. Devu, time traveler, tramping back bloody trails, grifted in isolation, exchanges oxycodone for fentanyl, devolving his desire to desire. Thrust headlong by shockwave of disentangled night terrors visible over the horizon of despair, fiery hand of self-vaporization is loosed. Nation of Judas Iscariot, lynched, genuflecting on white barking poplar tree. Absence, absence, creating intolerable hells. Communion cups with death. Toxicity blinding pulse of life. Knife, razor blade, gods of gun, pills, noose. Evangelical in anguish, de-escalation of trauma thrown to the wolves, sacrament of licentious sorrow slithering along through the veins, trampling vines underfoot, wine of sedition flows along knife edge, hand of fury, fiery fingers of abomination, furious cloud blasting wind, entropizing masses of human suicides, each grieved as necessary fallout. Night after night, he sleeps on a dirt floor at the foot of his son's suffering. Underskin demons blacken the heart, bleat cultural cultivation, squeals cognitive dissonance as traitors hang by their tongues from lampposts. Lynch mobs patrol cages, corrals where humanimals are bred for slaughter. Endgame equals one man de facto into the mobs of humanity roiling. Adamantine mind of Holocaust vaporizing individual DNA of destiny, ruling over a never-ending dystopia. Gods of Earth divvy up the spoils. Fundamentalist theocracy repeals free thought, regurgitates rebellion. Alien nation, chaining children, claiming eternal winter, old age destitution. Man, yes, man, truthfully I tell you, you are the eternal sun. O collision, inescapable psychism is proof, progenitors, progeny, head on into present kind, l'amour, tarot, left-handed scythe, whose handless past reverbs the future, youth murdered by duende, savagery of dying swan, drilling delirium of mind. So we are going to put up a website where you're going to be able to see the artwork in conjunction with the poems.
Oh, great.
Very good. Next month when I'm on, hopefully we'll have that website completed and I can direct, you know, the audience for whoever is interested, and we'll try to get it up so that perhaps we can even read along if, you know, we can get it to the point where we can not only recite the poetry or perform the poetry, but we can also read along and look at the artwork while that's being done. So trying to put together a holistic experience for 100 poems in a cycle.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you, Michael. Very interesting and an exciting new chapter here.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's. I've really been jazzed about this whole thing, you know.
All right.
About actually seeing if I can do it. I mean, you know, 100 poems, that's a lot of work.
It is. Okay.
Especially, you know, to keep them on a level where I'm satisfied with the quality.
Yeah, I mean, you're not just churning stuff out. You know,
no. Yeah. No, I really hate that.
I got it. Okay. Thanks again, Michael. I really do appreciate it. And next time I talk to you, it'll be Thanksgiving.
It will be.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll have another uplifting experience for you.
Okay.
All right, man. Thank you, Chuck.
Hey, thank you, Michael. All right, bye-bye.
See you next month.
Okay. All right, our next our next guest of the evening is Ava Bird, and I'm going to bring her on right now. That number didn't work. Hang on a second here. I have to do something here. All right, we're going to try to get hold of Ava now. Ava joins me each month, and previously she's been on the first Thursday of the month, but from here on, she's going to be on the fourth Thursday, and look forward to having her there.
Your call has been forwarded to an automated voice messaging system.
Oh, boy. All right.
8-0-1-2-3-4-9-3.
Okay, got rid of that. Okay, let's keep trying here. All right, 1 second. All right, folks, I'm gonna try this a different way, but just give me a minute. Okay, here we go. We're gonna try it a different way. Here we go. Okay. Well, I'm going to have to I'm going to have to get a different number from Ava, so bear with me. I do apologize for this. Ava is a very talented poet and always a great guest. She was also one of our very first guests. She was on the very first show. I think she might have been the actual first guest. So, very cool. All right, here we go. I got another number for her. Hopefully this one will work. Okay. Well, hello, Ava.
Been waiting all night to hear from you.
Well, I've been trying to get a hold of you for the last 6 minutes.
Only 6 minutes. I got the whole day planning and waiting to talk to you right now.
I know it.
I'm not complaining. I'm prepared.
Okay.
And it's good to hear you. I'm glad we finally connected. And
I am too. And hey, you have a little more time than you might have, so that's good.
Right. That way we can really sit back and talk.
Uh-huh.
What I wanted to bring up a little bit, I've been thinking about when, just this season and in general.
Yeah.
Is this season of Hallow's Eve, Halloween, which is a really fun holiday for a lot of people. It's, people have wonderful childhood memories of dressing up and, getting candy and going door to door and, trick or treating and party. It's a fun time in American culture. Not everybody likes it. Some people don't like it. But for the most part, most of us have fun Halloween memories at some points in our lives. It's a fun time of year. And with the coming harvest season, you have the winks of all the abundance that, it's harvest. There's abundance, there's fruitfulness, there's, the summer crops are the last of the summer crops are, they're still to be had. And you have the fall vegetables coming in, and it's a really nice time of year. It's fun, but it also has a shadow element, which is, I don't know that I'd exactly call it shadow, although shadows are actually a visual representation of what I'm talking about. But what I think most cultures in the world have some relation to this time of year. It might be different in other places, or maybe not. Maybe not everybody recognizes this, but it seems to be a very big turning point in with the seasons and just in life in general. It's a, you're gearing up for winter. It's like, there's a lot of excitement and strangeness this time of year. And, with Halloween, it got really, I think people have taken it to extremes that it really doesn't deserve, or nor does it have cultural roots in a lot of the, a lot of the darker, weird stuff that people can associate with Halloween. But, for the most part, it's in Mexican culture, they call it Day of the Dead. And it's a time where a lot of the energies are closer. The other worlds, the people that have passed over, our ancestors, and those that have passed are closer to us. There's a world beyond that gets pushed together this time of year. A lot of people call it a veil. the veil thin. Yeah. I kind of think that's overused. And I don't know that I think of it as a veil, but, you know, it carries the point over, which is our worlds are merged together more this time of year. And it's a time also, whether or not you believe that, it's still you can use the time to honor your past loved ones.
Right.
And I really like Day of the Dead for that because people have little gatherings and you put your loved one or someone you pass and you really look the picture on an altar and you light candles and, you know, it's a way you're bringing their spirit back and you're recognizing them and you're with them. So,
well, you know, our church has a service called All Saints Day, and it's for you know people who have passed on, and everybody remembers, and you know, all the names are written out in a bulletin and stuff.
That's great that they do that. They recognize that, and you know, it's a way for people to connect, and it's nice. That's great. Yeah, All Saints. That's another term, another way that people express it. But it's also there's that, and there's also there's the fun element, but then there is also this scary element where people think of ghosts and monsters and witches and all, and like Day of the Dead has a loaded meaning depending on how you want to perceive it or receive it. But there's also discarnate spirits that are stuck and hence ghosts. And some people believe that, some people don't, but a lot of people have experiences and, they're to a degree, we're not alone in this world. There's so many aspects of energy and living in life and, being, there's so many things that we can't see it. We can't hear it. We can't smell it. Most of us, some people can, but they say there's a lot going on beyond our human senses. And this is the time of year where it's most felt. And what, something that, and wanted to hear if you had any experiences with it, but often, it's like a spooky time of year. And I've noticed that around this time of year, weird things do happen. It's like, there's a little bit of a, there's like just kind of a, like they call it a little bit of a Halloween experience. Yeah. And if you have animals, just in the last couple of months, I mentioned it to somebody and like, no, that's not real. And then it's like in June too. But there's something about it when it happens, you feel it more.
Ava, you're kind of breaking up. Are you someplace with not a good signal, or?
Okay, signal. I'm talking. I have a. Can you hear me?
Not right now. I can barely hear you.
Really? Oh, okay. Here, let me move a little bit. Hey, it's a Halloween time.
Really? Somebody messing with you?
How about now? Can you hear me better now?
Yes, that's much better.
A little bit. Okay.
Oh, there it goes again.
Trees, but... Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, just keep going.
How about right now?
That's pretty good.
Okay. All right. I think I know what the problem was. I was moving too quickly for the spirit. They couldn't capture my voice.
Okay.
But it's a fun time of year, and I just wanted to recognize that and wish everybody out there a happy harvest and happy Halloween, Hallows Eve, however you want to celebrate, Day of the Dead, All Saints. But it's a nice day to, it's a nice time to remember our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And how about now? Am I
there? You dropped out, but you're back now. Yeah.
Okay. Now, also something that I want to discuss, other than just Halloween, is I am just wondering about, speaking of this time of year and death, there's a lot of deaths happening across the, there's a lot more deaths. Insurance companies are reporting more deaths. There's a lot of people that have been vaccinated are dropping dead. A lot of people are dying. They sudden adult death syndrome, sudden child death syndrome. None of this stuff existed before the vaccine. And all of a sudden you have new names, you know, new names of these.
You dropped out again. Ava, you've dropped out again. Well, what? How frustrating is that? I was just learning some new things there, and now I can't. Ava, is that you?
Can you hear me? How about now?
Yeah, there was like.
I'm so sorry.
Wind.
Yeah, this one doesn't get the best connection. That's why you know, the other one's better, and I don't know why that doesn't work either with Skype.
Yeah, the sometimes, other one just always declines for some reason, yeah.
That is bizarre. Maybe one day
it doesn't even ring. Maybe you have me on a block list on the other one somehow.
Well, are you calling from your cell phone when you call?
No, I'm calling from Skype.
Oh, from Skype. Maybe on my cell phone I have Skype calls blocked somehow that I'm unaware of.
Maybe.
That might be the case.
Although I think it's not really, it looks to your phone like a phone. So I don't know. But maybe we can figure that out. Yeah,
I never remember it being a problem until recently. But I'm sorry about this bad connection. I know that this phone is not the best phone for.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
and if it's a really.
Okay, you were saying about the death rates and stuff, and then that's about when you faded out.
Okay. I'm just really, you know, if we're talking about spooky things and scary things, it's been really spooky and scary lately of what's happening to people. And people that were trusting and were trying to do the right thing and felt like they were doing it to protect other people and themselves and felt like they had to. They were maybe coerced or felt pressured. That they're suffering, you know, these consequences of this that was never tested fully and never went through their full trials. They call it a vaccine, but it's not a vaccine. Just scares me. I've been really scared about other people. I mean, I didn't do it. I've been a vegan for a long time. Most medicine, a lot of, you know, like vaccines certainly aren't vegan. There's all kinds of animal DNA and foreign, you know, so for me, it's, you know, it's part of my religion. It's not part of, you know, my makeup, but for people that really believe that they are helping themselves and helping society, you know, for them, I'm afraid for them and people that, you know, kind of fell for it. And sometimes I get scared of what the future holds for a lot of people.
Who knows?
Yeah, and I don't mean to be like driven by fear or, I mean, part of this is like, it's a Halloween show, you know, so like.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, it's like a little bit that I feel, you know, I was talking about it a little bit. And if I ask myself, what am I afraid of? Like, you know, okay, oh, scary costumes, scary thing. You know, these are the things that, you know, when I really think about what scares me, you know, I'm scared for humanity, you know, us the living, the dead, or, you know, they got out of here. You know, they got out, you know, and here we are, and we're still here, and we have to make the best of it. We don't have to, but it would be great if people could have really nice, comfortable, healthy lives without interference from anybody, really, to take that away
right.
from them.
Yeah.
Either knowingly or unknowingly. You know, a lot of people don't realize that what they're doing is really unhealthy. Think back of, like, when you were a kid and all the stuff you ate, all the junk, and you didn't really think of, well, this is unhealthy, what this does. And, you know, when you get older and you actually start to feel it in your body when you eat certain things and eat certain things, whereas a kid, you don't really feel it or you don't notice it.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, we're taught or we're at least driven towards a lot of things that are really not just not good for us, but actually really poisonous.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. And then waking up from that and having to, you know, pick and choose. Well, you can't get away from everything 100% altogether because they're dropping it out of the sky. They're putting it in our water. They're putting it in our food.
Right.
It's in the air. So it's like, you know, okay, well, what can I minimize? What can I pick to be less, you know, to like have less of a burden on myself and my body? You know, so those are some of the things I go by to, you know, just try to minimize because, you know, you can go crazy trying to, you know, make sure, you know, think that somehow it's going to be a perfect world and things should be perfect because, you know, it's not really meant for that. This earth plane is not a perfection planet, you know? So we have to deal with what we have. I mean, I think we have to deal with it, but we also have power to change it and make it better. So you don't have, you know, the zombie apocalypse, these, you know, sort of the Walking Dead, Night of the Living Dead.
Right,
which, frankly,
right.
You go to a lot of American cities and a lot of places, and that's what it seems like. You ever walk down a, you know, like a city, a U.S. city, one of their, like, you know, like bad neighborhood streets? I mean, it's really, you know, certain
I
places
have.
Of it. California. I mean, and, you know, there's other places, too. Other places. California, there's a lot, you know, these places, it's like Night of the Living Dead with the, you know, people just zoned out on drugs and homelessness and whatever else people, you know, it's like there's other things too probably that I'm unaware of, but it's like living on this, in this reality on this plane, we're alive. There's a lot of people that are, seem like they're the Walking Dead and a lot of people are the Walking Dead, but they don't seem or look like it, you know?
They're
living. You know, here we are, you and I, Chuck, we're living and we're like getting out there and getting our voices and we want to make a change or we're really living life. Like we're, you know, we're like, we're living and we're, you know, taking advantage of the things in front of us that we have for being alive that, you know, we're not going to have. One day all this stuff is going to be gone. One day we're not going to be here. All, you know, there'll be other people doing these shows and on these airwaves and saying their thing. But here we are right now. We're alive. And it's such a precious moment to be here that we were chosen to do this and to be here, you know, and to live this life. I feel grateful at the same time. We have Thanksgiving comes right after Halloween. It's like, boom, they're all come together. But it is a good time to be grateful for our lives. Not everybody is still living. And a lot of people wanted to be living and they made an early exit. You know, and here we are. We still have our lives. We still have our bodies. You can still ride your bike. You're healthy. You can go to the beach. You can do things at your church and help people and do all your service stuff and be the wonderful Chuck that you are. And a lot of people, you know, their life ended early and they didn't plan on it. And they had, you know, they left a lot behind. But it's like, we're here. I feel grateful. And then when Thanksgiving comes, you know, I try to use that time also to be grateful for the planet for giving us all this wonderful food and again, our life, our families, our ancestors that think of all of your whole family line, like what all these people had to do and go through to live and go through all these lifetimes and centuries. And here you, and then here's Chuck, you know, Chuck's carrying on the DNA and the family line. And here we are, you know, like we are the product of thousands of years of, you know, human evolution. And, you know, their genes brought us here and we, you know, recognizing what they must have gone through. Like think of what life was like, let's say in, you know, I think the 1800s were a tough time to be alive. They say like, I think the 1700s, 1800s, it was tough.
Yeah.
You know, there were a lot of wars. There were a lot of diseases. A lot of, you know, it's like a lot of people didn't live that long. Medicine wasn't good. People, you know, there were a lot of things that weren't, you know, you think sanitation and plumbing and all that.
Yeah.
It was, you know, there's a lot, we have different pressures now, but a lot of the survival things, at least here, that's another thing too. We are lucky to have a country like the United States that gives us so many nice things to, you know, to have at our disposal and to use it in the proper way to not squander our opportunity, you know, given that we have a certain amount of privilege when you compare the rest of the world. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, it's the best place in the world, and but there's a lot of places where a lot of people live really poor. They don't get in. You know, they don't have shelter. And you think of, you know, places in, you know, different parts of the world where they're really poor and starving. And here we are with.
Those places in our country, too. There are some pretty.
I mean, I guess what it is like, I want to recognize the good things that we have here that we're given. Some of the stuff that works against us is invisible. Okay, we're not starving, but we have all these other issues that it's not visible, but we have our own tortures and our own challenges that are also really devastating to, like, a spiritual attack. You know, the society, I think, capitalism, you know, capitalism, patriotism, it's all very anti-spiritual. So we deal with, like, battles on different fronts. Like, we have the physical, you know, they're attacking us physically through all kinds of ways. The ways we just talked about, you know, the food, the vaccine, the air, the water, that, you know.
Right.
And then we have the spiritual. So it's like, if we can, you know, grab the things that we can grab to make us healthier and to share it with others. You know, we're living a purposeful life and giving back.
Yes. And on that's the, there's the music, that's the end of the show. So, thank you, Abba. This was fun. Sorry we had to, connect to the issues, but it was great having you on. Talk soon.
Thanks again, Todd. That was a lot of fun.
All right. Thank you, listeners. Good night.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course.